call that radio.
As you call that radio, it is season 4, it is episode 14, I think it is. And today we're going to speak to Slime City. I knew them back in the day as a band called We Are The Physics, back when we used to rehearse in the same studio at Dixon Street Studios, just next to St. Enoch Square. And it was a good chat about their upcoming gig at Stereo. We talk about their career and Michael's new book about how to be a failed musician. Great to catch up with them and discuss everything from the MySpace era to modern day. And great interview coming up, Slime City, in a little minute. But first, there has been a little bit of controversy surrounding Oasis tickets and Ticketmaster and Live Nation. So we're going to do that first. So a wee 14 minutes as Oasis responds to the fans after the Ticketmaster saga. And then we'll go straight to the interview. So if you just want to go to the interview, fast forward 15 minutes. But if you'd like to hear my thoughts on Ticketmaster, then do nothing. Just chill. You can see the comments.
I got you. Ready? Yeah, 1, 2. 1, 2, 1, 2. Yo, this is Charlie Tuna from Jurassic 5 Live and Direct here in Glasgow, Scotland, and you call that radio?
Call that radio, this is the news. Oasis finally responds to the Ticketmaster scandal that took some of the shine off the reunion tour announcement. You call that radio? 3, 2, 1... So just a wee, let's just catch up on what's been happening. If you've been on the moon and you didn't hear, Oasis have announced a reunion tour next summer. They're going to Edinburgh, Dublin, Manchester, London, and places like that. Probably more European dates and American dates to follow as well. But the scandal is, I missed this because I was at Lindisfarne Festival. I applied for the ballot tickets, but I was actually on stage in a farm. So I've not checked. I've not checked because I might be gutted if I'd find out that I was on the ballot. Because people on the ballot managed to get tickets, I understand, for the advertised price. Because basically what happened was, the ticket announcement came out that it was going to be £75 for seating and £150 for standing. And in the year 2024, for a stadium gig of this popularity, this demand, yeah, I was actually thinking that's not bad. That's pretty good going. And they also made an announcement about how they're going to clamp down in ticket touts because they're not going to let anyone resell it. So always good. Until Saturday morning, when everybody tries to buy a ticket and the advertised £75 and £150 was wrong. Because after getting a message that you're 950,284th in the queue, you wait for hours only to find an error message, which I can imagine would be very frustrating if you've queued that long. Others were, I was going to say, fortunate. They didn't get their own message. But in a lot of ways, they were less fortunate because they got through to find that it was actually going to be £370 for standing. So how did this happen? Why has it been advertised £150 and then it costs you £370? It's because of Ticketmaster's new dynamic pricing, which means if something's in demand, the price goes up, and if something's not in demand, the price goes down. Although I haven't seen much evidence of the price ever going down. Everyone's absolutely raging because it seems like the way they're getting rid of the ticket tout is by becoming the ticket touts themselves. What? So it has been used before. I've heard a few people saying that Bruce Springsteen and a few others. But I don't think the fact that other people have used dynamic pricing as an excuse. Oasis have been silent all week. There's been no tweeting going on. No one's been talking about it. But they finally responded over here. So, yeah. What is happening? Well, the quote is, prior meetings between promoters, Ticketmaster and the band's management resulted in a positive ticket sales strategy, which would be a fair experience for fans, including dynamic ticketing. And there's messaging saying, I mean, that is obviously sales chat. That's like an evil spin doctor. That's like something that a Tory spin doctor would write. But they do go on to say that it's not their decision. It's between the managers, the promoters, and they had nothing to do with it. Which I can actually believe. I can believe that. I'm sure the conversation was, how much money can we get? Give us as much money as we can. I don't think that Noel and Liam would have been in the conversations when they asked, do you want dynamic pricing? But, you know, if you are going to be the voice of the people, the voice of the working class, maybe they should have came to some sort of arrangement that... I mean, I suppose they could have... They've maybe said... I'm sticking up for Oasis here for a second. They could have said, right, we want... This is how much money we're getting, and you're going to charge 75 or 150. That sounds fair. We'll agree to that. But Oasis are probably getting paid a fee regardless of the ticket sales. So I'm trying to stick up. I'm trying to play devil's advocate here and say that they didn't know. I mean, Noel and Liam aren't going to be in these board meetings. They've agreed to something. It's Ticketmaster, I think, we really need to focus on. But because this is such a massive tour and everybody's talking about it, then maybe the positive that can come from this is that this will not be allowed to happen again. Dynamic pricing exists in other facets of culture, namely Ladbrokes and Paddy Power and all the bookies, because if so much people start putting money on a horse, then the price of the horse goes down, etc., etc. It's similar, not the same, but it's similar. I think charging 370 quid for a ticket is outrageous. And it's Ticketmaster that need to be taken to task here. Ticketmaster are in cahoots with Live Nation. Live Nation and Ticketmaster basically run the entire music industry now. So a consumer watchdog has launched an investigation. The Competition and Markets Authority said its investigation would include how so-called dynamic pricing may have been used, image scrutinise, may have breached consumer protection law. So those guys are onto it. The ASA weighs up 783. I'm not sure who the ASA is. It should state that quoted prices must not mislead. It doesn't regulate the price of tickets themselves, just the wider trading practices of businesses under the jurisdiction of trading standards or potentially the Competition and Markets Authority. Such pricing in itself is not illegal and is a common practice where Ticketmaster owner Live Nation is under investigation for its monopoly of live music. It's been used by Bruce Springsteen, Harry Styles, Coldplay, and various K-pop acts. I've never engaged in ticket surge prices, and I've never heard anyone complain about it before. I know it exists. So, And then there was a European Commission or something. Dynamic pricing to be examined by the European Commission. So the European Commission, an acting spokesman for the European Commission confirmed that it's working on a fitness check of EU consumer law on digital fairness, which it plans to adopt this autumn. So it's going to have a fitness check. But that's the EU. And because of Brexit, we're not in the EU anymore. We're not in the EU. So another Brexit bonus there, isn't it? If the EU, the European Commission or whatever, decides to ban dynamic pricing, like it's talking about, it won't affect people in the UK. Because we voted for Brexit and we still haven't had one benefit yet. All I've really noticed is the prices of things going up. Less fresh food, longer queues. It's almost like Brexit might have been a bad idea. There is a blue passport, I hear. I hear that if you apply for a passport now, you'll get a blue passport that's made in France. A good old British passport that's made in France. So, I think regardless of what the trading standards, Live Nation, Ticketmaster, they've got too much money. They'll just pay a fine. I don't see it going anywhere unless the backlash from this means that big artists like your Coldplays and your Harry Styles and your Bruce Springsteens and your K-pop guys and your Oasis say, right, okay, from now on, we will not do surge pricing anymore. If all the big names get such a backlash from doing this, then it's just going to be too much bad PR to do it. And that's the only way it's going to stop. Because they can afford the fines, they can afford to bribe people, allegedly. There's nothing actually illegal about surge pricing. The reason I think there might be a case to answer here is the fact that if it had been advertised as it's £370 a ticket, then nobody, well, some people would have, but the majority of normal working class, middle class people wouldn't have been able to afford that, so they would have said no. But the situation is you're getting people to go onto the internet with their credit card, thinking that they're buying four tickets for £150 each. You're queuing for 3 hours, you maybe had an error signal, went back to the start of the queue, and then you're there, you've got your old da, or your son, or whoever, your friends that are in work, crossing their fingers, waiting for you to do it. And you've got a few minutes to decide whether you're going to go ahead, proceed to checkout. And as a result, people, it's a good day for the credit card companies, because a lot of people who weren't planning on using their credit card will have used their credit card. And you can't say, oh, we didn't know it'd been demand. Ticketmaster can't say, oh, we didn't know it'd be in demand. Everyone knew it was going to be in demand. So let's just stop bullshitting and just say it's going to be £370 because this is going to be in demand. Just charge what you want. You're going to charge anyway. This backlash will stop other artists wanting to go down this road. Because every time anyone uses this kind of surge pricing, dynamic pricing, in-demand pricing, or whatever you want to call it, if people just stand up and refuse to pay it, and tweet, complain, and moan about it, like you've been moaning all week about Oasis tickets, something will happen because people will stop buying the tickets. Ticketmaster will stop trying to get away with this kind of greed. And the audacity to say we're clamping down on ticket touts when the biggest ticket company in the world is officially the new ticket touts in town. I would rather give to a real ticket tout who's actually just bumping me, saying, yeah, I paid £150 and I'm charging you £400. You've got money, you're desperate, and I'm going to bump you. That's fine. That's a good old-fashioned ticket tout. It's a tale as old as time. But for the actual company talking about how we are going to stamp out ticket touts by being the ticket tout, That's absolute madness. So I fuck Ticketmaster, fuck Live Nation, fuck Surge Pricing, all that stuff. It's got to stop, man. Everything's too expensive, man. Everything is too expensive. Onions are too expensive. I just think a lot of people bought tickets without planning ahead, without booking their holidays from work, without checking the diary with other half and going, oh shit, I'm on holiday that week. I think people just got excited and bought the tickets anyway. So I think on, normally we'd get it at face value, but because it's Surge Pricing, if you spent 350 quid and you can't go, you'll be wanting your 350 quid back. So Surge Pricing has actually fucked it for genuine ticket sellers, not ticket touts, just people that can't go anywhere and want to sell it at face value. Because face value is now going to be about 350 quid on average. That's a disgrace, man. Yeah, we need to stop this. We need to ban this. We need to ban this filth. Ban this. Ban it. Ban it. Stop letting Live Nation take the piss. Stop letting Ticketmaster take the piss. It's outrageous. Give some money to the grassroots venues, man. Every single week, there's a new grassroots venue getting shut down. There's local pubs getting shut down. Because people are spending money on this rather than... You could go for 400 quid. That's 40 local gigs you could go to. Or go to 20 and get yourself a couple of pints. But it just goes to show, Oasis are still one of, if not the biggest band in the world. And this is the first time. This is the first time that we've ever had this conversation. We knew dynamic pricing existed. We knew it was shite. But nobody noticed until now. So let's hopefully hopefully Ticketmaster gets into trouble for this one and they don't do it again. Anyway, this is the news on You Call That Radio.
You Call That Radio?
You Call That Radio. It's You Call That Radio. We are live with Slime City. It's Wednesday night. My computer's not working, so I have switched to the Mexican laptop and the Mexican microphone. I believe, to Michael of Slime City. How you doing, mate?
Good, man. How are you? How's the technical issues?
Yeah, everything seems to be going all right.
Okay. Good.
Could be better. We're having some technical issues for the last week, and I don't really know what's it. This one seems like it's my computer's fault. But last week, obviously, we were supposed to have you last week, but we bumped you for Republica.
And that's completely understandable. How did that go?
Not very well. We had, for the first time ever, StreamYard just didn't work. So we had an issue with StreamYard whereby it just didn't work at all. StreamYard have apologised. They messaged me saying it was their fault and they've given me 2 months free StreamYard as a way of saying sorry. And I have apologised to Saffron. But yeah, the iconic legend that is Saffron from Republica. If you're watching this, I'm a big fan. I'm very sorry. And I'm sorry if you had to hear me swearing at a computer when things weren't working, because I believe that she could hear me, but I couldn't hear her. So sorry about that. Bye. We've got Michael Slime City on the show tonight. As you can see, this amazing flyer. Don't worry, we've not transported you back to the 2008. It's Stereo Glasgow, the 28th of November. You're taking over Stereo with Fight Milk and Misty Occupier. And I suppose the first question is it dynamic pricing? Are you using dynamic pricing for that?
Absolutely, that's the future, isn't it? So yeah, it's £12 right now, but if anyone buys a ticket, that's going up as the night goes on tonight. We're going to be at £200 a ticket. No, it's probably not even worth £12. So the fact that anybody's willing to pay that is a good thing. So yeah, no dynamic.
I'll look at the comments for anyone who's on YouTube. You might be watching it. If you're watching on Facebook or Twitch or Twitter or anything, just jump onto YouTube instead. It's better over there. And you get the link to the get. And I miss the Occupier are legends, I remember, from back in the MySpace era, funnily enough.
Yeah, and I think that's how you met them. We used to play with them in our old band. But Misty Occupier actually gave Slime City our first gig in Glasgow. It was them, the Twistettes, and us. the first Slime City gig. I think it was in Sleazy's. So it's just great to have them back.
Amazing. The Twistettes are also playing this Saturday at Block. They were supposed to play in Broadcast, but there was a flooding. There's been a flooding in Broadcast. I think there's been a few gigs affected by that. Right. So now the Twistettes have moved their gig to Block with Pete Bentham and the Dinner Ladies from Liverpool. And I think there's going to be an all-day festival at the Govan Footbridge, a new bridge in Glasgow from Partick to Govan. Have you heard the news?
No idea. Never heard this, no.
Well, I think the fact there's a Colin Sain from Colin Wilson of Dijon 5 comment. I'm waiting till it hits £17.50.
Done. £17.50 tonight. Tonight only, back to 12 tomorrow.
Back to 12 tomorrow. And so Colin, actually know Colin from the same era as I remember you guys. You were called We Are the Physics.
Aye.
And we used to rehearse at the same place, which is Dixon Street Studios. Like everything that's been turned into... Is it a hotel or is it student flats?
It's a hotel. And see, when, I don't know if you remember this, in one of the rooms there was a big safe, like an old bank safe for the 1930s. You remember this? And don't know what was inside it. You couldn't move it. You couldn't open it. It was just there, just watching you like an immovable beast in the corner. And when they knocked down that building, I think it was Michael Drum, who plays drums in the band, he was walking past the rubble. And in the middle of the rubble, you just seen this big safe just sitting there. It can't be destroyed even by a demolition team. It's still there. No idea what was inside it. Maybe XLR cables, probably. I have no idea. But yeah, the safe could not be destroyed. The studio collapsed to the ground. The safe remained.
I heard that it's early demos of We Are the Physics and Gyro Babies are stored in that.
Get it destroyed then.
In the safe. So why was it? Why? Because I've not had a proper chat with you since We Are the Physics stopped.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I've seen you online. I've been enjoying your posts on Facebook and your MySpace posts ever since. But I don't have a proper chat. I've seen Slim City play live and stuff. But you know, you were probably taken away by your security, rushed into a waiting limos or whatever.
True.
So I'm loving the Slim City stuff. But what was the reason? What was the end of We Are the Physics? And how did Slim City start? I'm just curious from one benefit.
Well, I mean, the Physics was good, but we were wee guys, like when we started that, and we had this idea of what the manifesto of the band was going to be and what sort of songs we'd write. And then we kept doing that, and it was really good. It was successful for a while. You know, we were touring around, we were playing different countries, we were supporting big bands, and it was good and it was fun, but there's no money in it. As I'm sure everybody who's in a band knows, there's no money. So we were struggling to pay our rent. We were struggling to record. Took us like 3 years to get another album out after the first one. Had no money to really tour it. So we were really kind of dragging ourselves up and down the country. And we had lost that kind of wee spark. You know, when you have that spark to start with, when you start your band and you're like, this is great. This is the best thing I've ever done. And it lost the spark and we trapped ourselves in that manifesto of what sort of songs we have to write and why they've all got to be this way. And it got really boring and there was no joy in it for us anymore. So it was just a kind of, I think I wasn't having a very good lifetime at that point. And it just kind of ended. It kind of fell apart. We stopped in like 2013, and then we did a final gig in 2015, in a forest where they burnt a huge wicker chicken at the end of it. So we just kind of, and I'm talking to myself here. I don't know if you're there. I'm just looking at a sparse room in a zebra print chair, but it's a beautiful, beautiful little backdrop there. Which is quite, I mean. That is quite a sparse backdrop compared to that. I look like I'm in a fucking streamer's bedroom. Can I swear? Am I allowed to swear in this podcast? Sorry. You didn't have your earphones on there. Am I allowed to swear?
Yeah, you can swear, aye.
Right, okay.
I was just lying. I'm still listening. Continue, but I can actually hear you. I just realised this is a move to laptop. I have to put my laptop on charge, which I've done. I have done that now.
Well, it was a fantastic story and you missed it.
Well, I'll be able to watch the repeat on YouTube, so I'm looking forward to that. I think what I'll do is I'm actually going to play. I'd lined up a dial-up internet. It's the purest internet. since we've got this MySpace background, and since there might be some people who watch the show who aren't familiar with your work, so can we talk about dial-up internet as the purest internet?
You want to talk about it?
Yeah. I want you to introduce it.
Here it is. Here's our a song by Slime City called Dial-Up Internet is the Purest Internet, and it's about dial-up internet being the purest internet.
And I agree. I put a poll. If you're watching on YouTube, if you're watching on Twitter, Twitch, Facebook, or anything like that, you want to go onto YouTube because we're having a live and interactive poll that you can join. So the question is dial-up internet, is it the purest internet? Yes or no?
Okay, it's Mark from the future, and we're just interrupting here because we were going to play Dial-Up Internet is the Purest Internet by Slime City, but due to some copyright issues, I'm not going to risk it because we got demonetized by YouTube by playing Slime City songs, and I think Spotify's even stricter with that stuff. So we're just going to pretend that we listened to the song and go back to the interview. And, you know, normally other people would maybe throw an advert in there, but we don't have adverts on You Call That Radio. We've just got a Patreon. So if you like the show, you can support it at patreon.com/YouCallThatRadio. Thank you to everybody who already does. Now let's go back to the interview.
You've been listening to my main voice for 3 minutes there. That was like having a wee wank in the mirror. It was horrible.
Do you not like listening to your own voice?
No, do you?
I don't mind it. I don't
really?
Mind ears. I don't mind listening to singing, rapping, spoken word, anything that's been written.
Right.
So like if I listen to a song, I can divorce myself from the fact that it may be a shite song. I think I need validation that if a song was shit or my vocal sounded shit, I thought that meant I was shit. But right. Then somewhere along the line, I'm like, oh no, that's just a shite song. It needs mixed better or it needs something, or it's just a shite song. And it's no my fault.
So you're deflecting blame from yourself onto the mix.
Yeah, I just don't. Mix. But I can't listen to the podcast back. I can't listen to any interviews I do. That's too close.
I get you. Is that because you've not scripted it? Or you're not reciting something? It's not a performance?
It's too close to what I might be as a person. And that's terrifying.
That's frightening.
So I don't really like that. But... And obviously, the only way you get better is to listen back and what you're doing. But I think if I listened back, it would just really destroy my confidence. There'd just be no show.
Yep, 100%.
So, I was hoping that wee bit of practice and it would just get better and without doing it. But yeah, I don't mind listening back to songs. I actually quite like listening to a demo and just figuring out how to fix it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, definitely not. Don't mind my voice in a podcast setting. So yeah. But hopefully other people do. I don't know.
That's the hope. That's all you can hope for. Because I'm not tooting my own trumpet, so somebody else is going to toot it for me.
Let's talk about the purest internet. Was the MySpace era, was that the peak of internet for musicians?
I think they can... I would say so, but that's because I'm from that year. That's where I found relative success. But I think the kind of point of the song isn't so much about... dial-up internet itself being the purest internet. It's just a case of, at that point, you could log off, right? You could switch the internet off, and now you can't. Now you're constantly internet, and even when you're not online, you're online. You're doing something, you're getting followed, you're getting tracked, you're getting bombarded with adverts. So I think by calling it the purest internet, it's just like it's the most unaffected internet you could have, right? It was just, you logged on, you did whatever you needed to do, and then you fucked off. And I think you don't get that option anymore. You can't log off.
It used to be a thing. You'd go to the internet.
You go on the internet. You don't...
We'll watch a film, watch a TV show. What was a TV show around about that time? But you'd pick a show, a DVD maybe. Maybe watch Sopranos on DVD. Yep. Or would I go onto MySpace? And I think in the MySpace era, I would just spam my shit band because we were terrible at that time. I mean, by spamming... Learning to spam on MySpace meant that we got good numbers, which I would just assume meant the numbers were good, but it was obviously the majority of people would be listening to that and going, that's terrible. But at that point, we had a SingStar mic and an acoustic guitar. So we would write about 5 to 10 new songs a week.
Really?
And it was just because the two of us were just writing them. It was just the two of us. And we were just upload, like, you're talking like one take, you know, we prided ourselves on the fact that it was freestyle, it was one take. I mean, it wasn't really, it was freestyle in the sense that I had some lyrics written down and then a guitarist would play a riff for the first time. So we were quite proud of how shite we were. And then we sold out, you know, people said we sold out by getting, you know, drums and recording.
Quite right.
In the studio.
How dare you? How dare you use equipment?
Yeah. So we used equipment for a couple of small albums. And everybody did, we took it to a point that one was actually produced well. And people thought that was a sellout. But if you're actually, at the very beginning, we sold it by, not, it was the first time we'd ever heard the song. And that was the purest versions of our songs because they'd never been rehearsed before.
Right.
So that was pure. And the internet was, I mean, at the time, we've got, it sounds like we seem really old talking about this stuff, but it's quite interesting because it was like, the internet did exist, obviously. I mean, it existed when I was even at school, but it was shy. Nobody used it. Until MySpace, I remember like going to a couple of gigs, and I wasn't really involved in music, but I was going to a gig, and someone would pass me a card with their MySpace on it. And I was like, internet, eh? And it's like, oh, my, it's internet, eh? And then, and between that, and then obviously LimeWire, which, you know, I used legitimately for music. And between that, I was like, wow, this is incredible. You can, in fact, I've just went, I just switched an iPod 3 weeks ago.
Switched to an iPod?
To an iPod.
What were you on before?
I was just, I've just been on Spotify. On, I've got Spotify Premium.
Ah.
And, but I've been kind of like creating this best new music playlist. So I kind of go deep diving into new music that comes out. And it feels like a bit of a job. I'm always skipping a song. I'm always adding a sort of playlist. And I never just didn't get to enjoy it. So I've been, so week one, I lost, and my battery ran out. My phone ran out of battery. And I walked home listening to Tom Waits' album that I'd never heard before. And it was amazing. And it was a bit raining a wee bit. And I was like, this iPod is the purest form of music. And I think I was too poor to own an iPod the first time round. So it was just like, it just felt good. And then the following week, last Saturday, I got water damage and I broke it.
What kind of iPod is it?
Sixth generation.
Can you get another?
I've got another.
There you go. I like that because it's limited choice. And it, like the thing about streaming is you can listen to everything at any point, in any order. And if you don't like it, there's another one. An iPod, you can skip easily. You know, like, you couldn't do that as easily on a cassette, right? A CD. It was a nightmare to walk about with a CD, but yeah, I think I quite like choice paralysis I get quite regularly, so I end up listening to the same thing because there's too much choice. There's too many things to choose for you. So if I have limited choice and I say, I've got these two albums to listen to, I'll listen to those albums. And I think that's where a lot of that kind of streaming stuff loses me because I don't have to listen to albums. I can listen to something else if I get bored of the album or if I fancy something else halfway through the album or I think of another song, which sometimes happens to me. So it forces you to actually listen to stuff. And I think that's a good thing for musicians, maybe not for a consumer, but I'm guessing Nanias have made music for consumers. We've made music to make the music, right? So yeah, I think it's a good thing. I think there is a pure element to that.
Absolutely. That's just what I'm thinking. It's like, there's all these albums that, you know, the end of the year, I'm like, my top 10 albums of the year of new albums. And really, probably only a few of them I've listened to on repeat multiple times.
Aye. Oh, so when I was a wee guy, I listened to the same album like hundreds of times.
You had to. It was, when was it?
I know, it really expensive. I was like, I think that recently, I remember I got like 10 or 10 or something or 15 quid for my birthday 1 year. And I was like, all right, I'm going to get into it and get some CDs. I could get one CD, if that, and it had to be like an old CD because there was nothing new I could get for that price. It's like, that was it. And that was it. I had to listen to that one album for a year, basically. So you had to pirate music. You had to get CDs and mixtapes and stuff off your pals because there was no way to hear music. Otherwise, you'd be stuck with one album for a year.
And with the, like, so because I've only got 20, say, albums on my iPod right now. You're not going to use it all up, like, oh, I don't know, like that. I'm just going to skip another album. You've got to learn to love the album or give the album a chance because you've only got 20 albums.
But some albums are shite.
Like, some albums are shite.
Bands or artists don't really need 14 songs. Two's fine. Yeah. That's all right. You don't need to have 14 songs. And it's a kind of weird marketing thing where we've got to have 14 of your songs. Who's writing 14 brilliant songs? Hardly anybody. You're writing maybe four or five really great songs, then a bunch of stuff that's all right or experimental or stuff that might not have as much appeal as the other stuff. And I think it really just depends what type of artist you're. And I think forcing every artist to have an album is a really weird, archaic kind of thing in this kind of in this modern era where we're still forcing artists to drop 14 tracks when they don't really need to. Needies listen to them.
What do you think? That's not. That I've noticed that some people just aren't bothering with albums. So when I speak to sort of younger people, we had like for example, AJ47 is an up and coming hip hop artist, and I was like, "So you get any plans for an album?" Because he's been dropping singles for a while, and he's like, "No, not yep. until he's ready and he's got the thing." And I thought that was quite a mature. For a young artist, but also it may just be that young people are just aren't as interested. You just want to go on that playlist. You want to have that.
Doesn't have the same. And I feel like albums were a marketing pool for labels. They weren't really. I don't think artists really wanted to make albums when they first started. You know, it was a kind of here's a compilation of our songs so we can sell it for an accelerated price or whatever. But it was the same with Slime City. Like we said, oh, we're never doing an album. We're just doing singles. We're just going to release singles. We're going to put out a single and then do a tour for every single. And that's what we'll do. We'll do like four singles, five singles a year. We'll do five tours. And then we kept going with that. We kept releasing singles and every kind of gig we'd do or every kind of tour was a wee event. You know, we had a single. Here's a single you can listen to. Here's wee kind of extra tchotchke things you can get with it. But then we did, then COVID hit and we couldn't gig. So we had this bunch of songs. We were writing a bunch of new songs, and those old songs were just going to go missing, right? So we were like, "Let's do an album." So that's the only reason there is a Slimes album, is because of COVID.
So there would be no album without lockdown.
Yeah, we wouldn't have done it. We'd have just kept releasing singles.
See, that was it. That's an example of I've heard a few bands saying things like that, just like making it, and to stay relevant, you know, I watched the YouTubers, you know, the music industry moguls, the self-styled ones, and they sing like, forget about the albums. You just want to stay in the conversation and release a single. In an ideal world, so say, for example, you've got an unlimited back, you've got a bunch of songs, unlimited bunch of tunes that you're very pleased with. What would you say the peak amount of release ratio would be? What would you do?
Money
and fans as well.
Fans, right?
Because I suppose
we don't know what that's like.
You want to drop a launch party with the single, so you don't want to you don't rip the arse out of too many Glasgow gigs.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a kind of, this is where I fall down in the music industry, is that kind of planning, organisational aspect, logistics. When's the best time to do something, when's not? For me, the best time for me to release a song, and I'm guessing everyone in my band feels the same, is when you've written that song, because that's the best you'll feel about that song. And then when you play it and play it and play it and record it and play it, every time you do it, you feel a little worse about that song because it's lost the kind of spark and freshness that made it exciting to you. If nothing was fans were going to turn up, I had the money to do whatever I liked, I would just release a song as soon as the song's done, because that's when it's at its best. It can get refined and it can get actually better technically as you perform it and record it and think about it. But just see that when you've written that song, it's came out your head and it's there. There's a thing. That's the best I feel about a song. And for me, I think that's the best time to release it. Probably
It's not been technically refined. There's still magic about it.
Yeah,
there's still a magic.
That's exactly
how concentrate.
Aye, you're still thinking about it. Aye. And it's probably technically you listen to that record and you'll be like, oh god, that sucks, but it is that that has the kind of the vibe, the thing that the X factor, as they say, the wee thing that makes it spark, is in that, and it's the best. And it's the kind of, you know, when you go to record a song like that, they call it demo-itis, because you're just so obsessed with the demo you made. And you're like, well, how come it doesn't have the same vibe? And it's no cause of the sound, it's because you're doing it again. And it's that kind of thing. It's just, it loses a bit of spark. And that's what I used to quite like about Slimes. And not that I don't know, it's just a different vibe, but we would just write songs and then put them out. And that I like that.
And is there a celebration on the 20th of November for any song in particular?
No. we've been touring a bunch of new songs. So we were playing them to audiences who had either heard us before or hadn't heard us before, and seeing what ones they liked. So a couple of them will be just for us to practice them again in front of an audience. But what we tend to do when we play Glasgow is play a song from our album called Glasgow is a Shitehole. And we don't play anywhere else except Glasgow, because it's fine to slag Glasgow in Glasgow. But if I'm playing Glasgow's a Shitehole in London and somebody's agreeing with me, I'm like, right, no, you can't say that. We can say that, you can't. So we only date in Glasgow. So I think we'll probably put that one, and we get a lot of people asking for that one. Don't know why. So it's a very Glaswegian thing to do, is like want to slag your own city off. I mean, I don't think it is really a song that slags off Glasgow at its core. The title probably is misleading. But yeah, that's one that we do only in Glasgow. So, and there's a couple of things we're doing at the show that's making it special. So one, we've got Fight Milk and Miss the Occupier playing. Having that lineup like that is brilliant. Fight Milk are from London. They hardly ever come up to Scotland, so it's great to have them. And we're doing things. So I don't know how much you remember about us playing, but we have this shoe that we bring out.
You've took the words out of my mouth.
Sorry.
That is on my notes to ask you about. Okay. I don't really remember the shoe when I was watching you live, but I've been keeping track of the shoe raffle.
Right. Yeah.
I seen you on Vic Galloway show. In fact, we can maybe do that. Should we maybe just do that first? Or would you like to introduce what we see? Because I'm just going to go to your Twitter page.
Aye. Well, the shoe's a kind of, it's like a wee synthesizer we've built inside a businessman's shoe. And halfway through the set, we'll usually pull the shoe out and have a little solo in the shoe. And that's effectively it. But it's become, you know, it's kind of overshadowing us a little bit. A lot of people like the shoe more than they like us, which is understandable. But the shoe's got lore. It's got its own universe. It's like a fucking Marvel character. It had a Twitter account at one point. I don't know who made that. So things like that.
It's like Mankind having Sokko.
Well, it's kind of, look at it and see what you think.
Let's have a little look at it for people that don't know. I'm aware of the shoe from this as well. So hopefully BBC, this is fair rights usage.
But I don't think there is fair rights usage in the BBC's nature. So we're just going to go back to the interview with Slime City.
I had to Google what an islet is. Could you explain to the audience what an islet is?
I don't know, Michael Guitar came up with that. I guess that's the little holes you put the laces in. Is that what an islet is?
Right, I wasn't sure. I thought it was like when I googled islets, it came up with the studs almost, is the best way I can describe it.
He said islet, I just went with it. I don't know what it is.
it's good. Do you know what? I've actually got a shoe story from Lindisfarne Festival.
Really?
So I don't know if you're already doing this, but the Whippet Beans, what they do is they have everyone put their shoes in the air for a song. So I think maybe you could maybe steal that idea. I'm sure they wouldn't mind. They're good guys. The Whippet Beans, shout out to the Whippet Beans. Geordie, ska, rock, hip-hop, fun band. And they had everyone with their shoes in the air. And after a few drinks, I was just copying that throughout the techno tents and stuff. Just because I'm quite sore because I've been walking for so long. I hadn't slept for a long time and I was been walking in my shoes. So it was good to feel my sock on the cold soft grass, and also feel like I was in a, you know, the way the Daily Record would maybe describe someone as a reveller at a festival,
right?
40,000 revelers. You know, it isn't really happening normal. We don't say, oh, we had a good revel last night at the bridge. But it's a good newspaper word that they use.
Revelers.
And I feel like for the first time in my life, I felt like a reveler because I put my shoe in the air and people were copying me and putting their shoe in there. So maybe you could feel that.
Well, this happens. This has actually happened. There are gigs where people have started holding their shoes up in the air. The shoes became a kind of mascot, which, like it or not, seems to be here to stay.
The shoe is important. And is the shoe getting writing credits? Is the shoe appearing on releases?
The shoe is on our album, but we just don't say what song it's in. You'll hear it if you're listening for it. But yeah, it doesn't deserve fuck all. We made it, and it's a Frankenstein's monster, right? So it's like, we made this shoe, and like we made a bunch of shoes because we decided to give a shoe away. And at one point, we were all playing a shoe.
That was the shoe raffle.
The shoe raffle. And it was very controversial because somebody won it and then didn't claim it. So we started a kind of online beef with this guy called Brian. And we had to give it to another Brian in London. But then it wasn't the real shoe. We've still got the real shoe. It was a shoe clone. So there's a bunch of stuff like that. I mean, what the fuck am I talking about?
A shoe clone. Sounds like a good antidepressant or something. Jigsaw Tiger is saying, love it. Colin Simon's got a question for you. He says, what's your favourite K, 57K or 20.8K?
What, 56K, actually.
And understand. So you're signed to Last Night from Glasgow, is that right?
They release, will they manufacture records and put them out, yep.
So there's some good people on there. Biss, who have been on the show before. You've played loads of gigs with Biss. They're amazing.
Biss, yeah. We go way back with Biss. They gave We Are The Physics their first gig in London. So been friends with Biss since like way back, mid-2000s.
Absolute legends. And we've had Biss on the show before. We've had Cosmic Rough Riders. We've had them on the show before as well. I remember the first time they came, well, their first time round when they played Tea in the Park. And so my understanding is, well, Last Night from Glasgow is you sign up as a member for the year and then you get free gig tickets or discounts from, how does it work exactly?
I believe it's a subscription service. So it relies on folks trusting the curation of the label, right? So the folks who run the label put out a bunch of records, a certain amount of records per year. If you sign up for various tiers on the label, you get a certain amount of records per year. So it really is just about what your taste is. But there's aspects of the label where they do Past Night from Glasgow, which is these re-releases that have come out and they're finally getting released on vinyl, that kind of thing. So it's not all new releases. It's a real mixed bag of artists and genres, but interesting collective, really great idea, and folks really really enjoy it. They like getting the mix of records from the label.
Yeah, because I've noticed there's been some big names that have re-released classic albums and stuff like that, which is great to see. And so I was going to ask you, true or false, you wore a Snoop Dogg t-shirt, ironically.
I knew you were going to fucking bring this up, right?
Yeah. No,
false, right? Because it wasn't Snoop Dogg. It was Wu-Tang. Right, let's get that straight. And it was a Wu-Tang t-shirt. And I remember you pulled me up for it. You didn't pull me up for it. You went, oh, you like Wu-Tang? And I was like, no, it's kind of ironic. And I was like, what did that? It's called ironic. And I'm like, it's all right, you'll forget about that. 20 years later or something, you're like, oh, did you wear that t-shirt? I want to explain the irony aspect of that.
Okay,
that was back then. I got it. So this was when, remember when Primark started releasing t-shirts with bands and stuff and brands on it? And it was kind of new back then. You know, you would get Ramones, see Nirvana, and then there was a Wu-Tang one. And I was like, you get a Wu-Tang t-shirt in Primark? And then somebody bought me it as a joke for my birthday because why are you getting a Wu-Tang t-shirt from Primark? and then I was wearing it. And you, the irony aspect was you can get these t-shirts in Primark, which I think is quite an interesting thing, right? Because it's just a kind of, you know, all these kind of culturally important brands get reduced to just a sellable bit of jump wholesale.
I got a Notorious B.I.G. one.
Yeah.
Primark in Tenerife. I was in a Canary Island anyway, and I went and got, but I actually like Notorious B.I.G., but I got my B.I.G. t-shirt. Yeah, I just remember there being Snoop Dogg for some reason. I think Wu-Tang Clan must have been playing in Glasgow that night, because I thought you were going to be wearing the... Oh, you've got
that would have been a coincidence if that had happened.
No, it was a coincidence.
Yeah, it's that, you know, like, I'm not into that kind of stuff where, you know, you're wearing a t-shirt and somebody's like, well, name five records by that artist. I hate that kind of cultural gatekeeping stuff. I kind of like to piss people off by going, I don't know any of these songs. I kind of enjoy that kind of antagonistic thing. That kind of, you need to earn it. It's kind of like, show me your papers, prove that you can be wearing this £5 t-shirt from Primark. And I kind of like that aspect. And I always think of like bands like, you know, like Chumbawamba, where they were essentially like an anarcho-punk band, but then they had a huge hit and people think of them as being the I Get Knocked Down drinking song band, and that's completely undermining the subtext of that song. It doesn't belong to Chumbawamba anymore, it belongs to people. And I kind of, that's the kind of, people could buy a Chumbawamba t-shirt in Primark if it existed, because they like the design and because they know them from that song, and that's legitimate, that's fine. And this is a really long-winded way of me defending why I was wearing a Wu-Tang t-shirt.
it's fine. I interesting what you just said there, as I noticed.
Oh, you've cut off.
Yeah, one of the memes that were going about last week, which is quite funny. I'm not offended by the humour, but it was like, imagine being 45-year-old and missing out on Oasis tickets to a lassie called Sheila from Stoke, 19-year-old, who just wants to hear Wonderwall. And obviously I can imagine the pure Oasis hardcore fans would be disappointed. But at the same time, there is this snobbery that was going about where people were like, oh no, how can you like enjoy the music if you're under 25? And it's like, between 14 and 18, I was going to team the parks. And I mean, I was more passionate, if anything, about music. And the idea that you can't enjoy something unless you're an expert in it,
yep,
pretty weird. And so, yeah, I thought it was interesting that people were like, and it is like you said that same thing as well with the band. Name three albums from that band. Do you need to be able to learn three? You might just like the t-shirt and you may like a few songs.
Yeah.
But right, I was in Mexico, there was their equivalent of the Barra's Market. It was like a rock, metal Barra's. It was crazy. And there was a lot of t-shirts there from bands. And I couldn't, you know, there's bands that I really like the Cramps. But I felt, because of this gatekeeping, I didn't buy the Cramps t-shirt. Now I regret it, because I love the Cramps. But I was just imagining.
What was the gatekeeping aspect you were afraid of? That someone would ask you, name five Cramps records?
Three albums. But, you know, I could have just learned that because I like the Cramps.
That's what annoys me. It's no school. You don't have to prove yourself. Wear whatever you want. Get it through whenever it makes sense.
If somebody wants to buy a Gyro Babies t-shirt at a Gyro Babies gig and that's the first time they've heard this, I'm not going to say, here, keep that tenner in your pocket. You don't know about the MySpace days.
Well, I think they're buying it off you. They're supporting you. Buying out a Primark isn't the same as buying it straight after the Ramones, right?
Well, this is Mexico. So they're supporting the cartel.
Right.
And it's not fair. Not really that at all. What about Jules Holland? True or false, you hate Jules Holland?
I don't. False, but no, I don't hate Jules Holland. Obviously, that song's a kind of tongue-in-cheek. It's not about Jules Holland, it's about what Jules Holland represents, right? And that's the kind of inaccessible mainstream music ways visibility for working class bands. You know, the gentrification of pop music, unable to get to afford to become at the level you can get on Jules Holland, and that's the only way anybody's ever going to see you on mainstream television, right? So it's about that. It's not about Jules Holland himself, but having toured that record a lot, I've heard a lot of stories about Jules Holland that I won't repeat. So lovely man, as far as you know.
Well, from what I heard, he's an ass, but that's no fair either, because sometimes people annoy people.
Gorgeous. Yep.
It's like, you know, you try to be nice to everyone, but even when you're a zealous celebrity and you're playing a gig, you've got to talk to a million people. Sometimes you're just like, I need to go and have a cigarette or something. And someone could go, what a fucking cheeky bastard.
Oh, yeah. You don't know. I'm quite a shy person in general, and I'm always really wary about not coming across as being arrogant or like I'm ignoring people or kind of aloof. So I try and go the other way, and I think by mistake, I'm just being a prick because I'm trying not to be aloof. And I think I'm just trying so hard not to offend or somebody to leave with a bad taste in their mouth. And that worries me so much that I would rather just hide than speak to people.
Well, I did that talking to somebody. I'm not going to say the name, but it's a band I went to school with.
Say the name.
John Langan, actually. Fuck it. John Langan. John Langan band. I went to school with him. And he was about to go on stage, and to do the opposite of a lift, and I was a bit wasted. I just started talking. And just a mad way, I was going to say, not a trauma dump, what's another word? A mad way dump. It was just like, have a good gig. You know, loving the tunes, blah, blah, blah. And it gave that look as, you know, have a good night, mate.
Yeah.
And that was a big part of my fear on Monday, when I was like, because I'd actually had such a good weekend, you know, that way you're looking for all the bad things that you might say.
Oh, the fear.
I was like, there's nothing. I actually had a really good time. I've not got any toothache, although that might be coming back. But at the time I was like, wow, that was actually a good weekend. I'm just a wee bit dehydrated. And then I remember the look that... Have a good night, mate. Look, I was like, shit, I did do the John. But John's all right. I'm sure I was going to actually send John a message, but he'll be like, yeah, no, you were just mad, mate. It's okay. I get it. What am I going to do? Apologize for being mad.
Well, that's the thing. This is a you thing, and it's a me thing as well. It's, you beat yourself up for minuscule things you may have said, or the vibe you've given off when probably most people don't even notice it, or you hope that that's the only thing I cling to after a kind of altercation like that, is that maybe they just don't remember that, so it's fine.
Well, generally people don't give a shit.
No, yeah, I mean, yeah,
that's a positive and a negative. But most people don't care. Let's listen a wee bit of Jules Holland and just a little bit of the song, then I want to finish. I've got one more I wanted to play before he went. So this is about the gentrification. We'll go for the album version. I reckon we'll listen to get copyright strict.
But we did get copyright stricken on the YouTube version of the interview, which you can check out at youtube.com/ You Call That Radio. I really like Slim City's music, and I think you will too, but you can do it in your own time. Check out on YouTube or Spotify or wherever, or Bandcamp, slimcity.bandcamp.com. But yeah, we're not going to risk it for the Spotify. We don't want to get banned for Spotify. So we're just not playing any music. Just imagine you've heard a really good song, and we will go back to the interview with Slime City. Remember to support the show at patreon.com/ You Call That Radio.
Less Jules, more Top of the Pops, Slime City, live on You Call That Radio. Unless you're listening to this in the replay or on the audio podcast, then yeah, go and check it out. You have great videos on the YouTube. And what couple of quick fire questions? Who's your one band? Who's your biggest influence that you'd like to support?
Cardiacs is probably my most influential band, but they're a band. I don't know how much you know about Cardiacs, but ever listen to Cardiacs, they ruin music because you think I could never. And that, so for a long time, you're just like, I'll never write a song that's like that ever. And you just can't. And it took me a long time to realize, of course I can't, because I'm not Tim Smith from Cardiacs who writes those songs, and it's only Tim Smith that can write that, and that's why they're so special.
Well, that's what album would you recommend? Because I've heard of them, but I actually know nothing. But I've got the iPod, so this is the beauty of it.
Shove it.
Otherwise,
in your
I just stick on Spotify, I'd listen to one song, but now I'm going to be stuck with
I would recommend Sing to God.
Sing to God. Okay, well, that is downloading legally. And Cardiacs. And what about new bands? What's it doesn't need to be Glasgow, but just is there any new bands you're like, yeah, they're smashing?
Yeah, a lot of them. And we touring about, you'll be the same. You see a bunch of bands, you're like, I would never have come across this band if we hadn't just crossed paths in this way. So there's like Fight Milk, obviously a fantastic band from London. Our friend Beth's band Flinch is fantastic. They're doing an amazing stuff at the minute. And there was a band from Edinburgh, from Kirkcaldy, called Serious Adults that we played with a bunch of times, and I loved them. I'm not sure they're doing anything live anymore, but it was great to see them. And you know, there's a Glasgow band called Bin Juice. Love Bin Juice. I think they split up, or they're on a hiatus or something.
I don't know. I seen them play Carlton Studios not long ago. It was like a wee, I think it was maybe the Alabama 3 after party, because it was quite late night, and I was, I kept on seeing them supporting people that I liked, and I'd heard lots of good things, but I seen them live. They were brilliant. Really enjoyed
fantastic,
them.
Yeah, man.
I don't know if there's anything happening at the minute, but maybe a wee hiatus. Stuart says, like that last song, and Jigsaw Tiger saying, Prowl, Slime City are absolutely awesome live. So, and yes, if you want to see them live, then look at that amazing MySpace flyer. It's stereo, 20th November, £12. Get there before the in-demand dynamic pricing takes control. And you've got Misty Occupier, Legends, and Fight Milk, who I'm not familiar with, but I'm sure are good. They're traveling all the way from London for it as well. So that's brilliant, man. So what's next? Are you got any more tours? You got any more releases coming up?
We're doing a new record. We're trying to record a new album, which is tough. We've got all the songs for it, but just trying to. I'm very tough to please these days. Is what I kind of what do I want to sound like? I just don't know, and that's the problem. So we'll be doing that. Hopefully, get that out next year. We're doing maybe a couple of gigs with our friends Desperate Journalist, who are a band from London. And doing a few more gigs early next year. Like, I think we're going to do London and a few down in that way, headliners. Don't know yet. I really should pay attention.
Well, no, it's all right now, because basically it's just focusing on one gig. It's good to just focus on the next one. The next one's the best one. It's the 28th of November. It's available on Skiddle. The link is in the comments if you're watching on YouTube. I'll put it in the bio as well.
Yeah, please do buy it, because we're doing this. We're just not going through any promoters. We're putting this on ourselves. It's quite a big one for us. And we need to pay all the bands. So please make sure everybody can eat by coming to see us.
I've got one last song I want to play to end the show, and that's You and Everybody that you Love Will Die When They Die.
Yeah.
So if I'm being full, but obviously an optimistic message behind that.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that.
I think it's an optimistic song. I think it was maybe Vic Galloway that called it the song of the summer, which I think's great. But then when we released it, nobody would play it just because of the title. But I think it's an optimistic song. You know, it's about realizing your mortality, and that you need to just enjoy your life, because you're going to die. It's inevitable. Don't sweat over some shit that does not matter.
Oh no! Before we do that, because I've got two. I'm actually to be two computers. I've actually got notes up here, and the whole point is that you've been through a lot with We Are the Physics and Slime City. You could write a book about it. And you have wrote a book about it.
It's almost like I have. What a coincidence. Yeah, I have. Yes, I've written that.
It's called You're Doing It Wrong, My Life is a Failed International Rock Star in the Best Band You've Never Heard. So let's talk about that. Did that come out of lockdown?
What was that, sorry?
Was that a lockdown project?
No, you know, everybody, I found a bunch of video files on a hard drive, and it was just clips of We Are the Physics on tour, and I'd forgotten about it all. You know, like, you come out of something like that. And it wasn't, we weren't a huge band, but we were doing all right, and we were touring about, and it just went so fast, and I'd forgotten about it, and I seen people in the video, and I was like, I forgot about him. How did he exist? So I thought, I'll put a wee story up online about it, and it, people responded to it really well. So I was like, I'll put another one up about the time we played Tea in the Park, but they put us on at 11:30 in the morning, and there was nobody there on the main, like the big stage. It was like playing to nobody. So I put that up, and people really responded to that. I was like, you know what, I'll put another one up, and it's about the time we went on the BBC radio and we did a cover of Katy Perry's Firework, but we changed all the words, so it was just, do you ever feel like a plastic bag, over and over again. And people really responded to that, and it got like hundreds and hundreds of views. And I thought, maybe I could just put a bunch of these wee stories together, but no really about me, no really about We Are the Physics, just about what it was like to tour about at that time in a band that didn't have any money. And there's hundreds of bands that are doing that. You're doing it because you love doing it. You're not doing it for the money. You're not doing it to be famous. You're doing it because I'm making music and people are paying to come and see, and people want to hear it. And you're just touring it and touring it and touring it, and you're not getting any bigger, and you're not getting any money. And there's hundreds of bands like that. And it's a kind of celebration of those jobbing bands that nobody remembers, but they existed and they mattered for a brief moment. They mattered to themselves and they mattered to other people. And that's what the book's about. And it's just from a personal angle, this is how I felt about that.
It's brilliant, man. I mean, it's something that I've considered doing as well. Like, I started, I think my other laptop I've got, it's the beginning of that. But I don't know, but I think we're doing our last album next year.
Right.
So
last one.
So I've got an ending for it. So
right.
That's about, I put a link to yours. So I'm really interested in reading your taking it all, because I quite like the, you know, that's why I think like the Dig documentary was so good, for, you know, with Brian Jonestown Massacre.
Yeah.
I don't think they particularly liked it. I know the Dandy Warhols didn't like it because of the way it made them look.
But right.
But it made them famous, because obviously I was a fan of both bands before the documentary. I was quite early on there in my stoner era, reading NME. I was aware of them, but they became quite famous over that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And even though they didn't come across well in their opinion, I just quite like the idea of, you know, something that's not got the Alan Partridge style. Needless to say, I had the last laugh. You know,
yeah.
I think there's a lot of beauty in failure.
Well, I agree, and I think the book, this is what I'm hoping anyway, it's not a bitter book, it's not, oh, the industry let us down. It's the industry opened a lot of doors for us, and we just didn't go through them. We were just like, oh, I'm not interested in that. I remember our label at the time going, we can make you famous tomorrow. And we were just like, nah, it's fine, we'll just keep doing this for a while, just keep playing the 13th note. We were happy doing that, and then we just got pushed into a limelight. It was interesting, and it was good, and there was a lot of opportunities, but we failed because we were fucking idiots, not because the industry let us down. The industry tried to support us. And I think that's what the beauty of the book is. It's about people who just aren't that interested in that part of it. That's not why you're in a band. You're in a band because you like being with your pals. You like playing music to people that want to hear your music. You don't want to play the hydro. That's just knowing you. That's no, I'm not interested.
Yeah, it's weird. It was actually one of our drummers. One of the reasons I think he left the band was because he was like, We're getting really good, and we're only getting really good, but we're getting tight, we're getting better. Right. But he was talking about, you know, I think it was a Foo Fighters gig or something at Hampden. He's like, we could be going for that. And I'm like, no, you're way off here. This is not what we're doing here. And it's good. It'd be good to replicate what we have in Glasgow to more cities across Europe.
That's exactly it.
Full time, but still playing that kind of 200 to 800.
That's exactly it. If you could keep that going and just be that sustainable forever, or for however long you want to do it, that's the for me, that's the ideal. Playing like 200 or 300 people is as much as possible across the planet.
Yeah. And you just pay your bills and you just have good fun. Yep. And you're not recognised, you can still get on with your life.
Actually,
being successful is terrifying. That's what terrifying.
Absolutely. And that was one of the things that really worried me about the physics, and it wasn't that we were getting famous, but people of a certain age or demographic would recognize you. And it started to really kind of worry me, because I've got that kind of, I don't want to be aloof to people. I don't want to be accidentally rude to people. But I was getting recognized in daft places, like fucking Boots, when I was buying like stuff for my arse or something like that. And they're like, you're real fit. I'm like, aye, you'll be the physics and you get a sore arse. Aye, that's me. It's like things like that. I didn't like it. And I started to stay in the house because I didn't want. It's not like I was getting mobbed. I wasn't famous. There wasn't like hundreds and hundreds, but anytime if I went to a gig, somebody there probably had met me or had played with me or knew me, and they were just being nice. They just liked my band, or they just knew me, but I was just getting so, no, I don't like it, I don't like it. So there's an element of self-sabotage sometimes, and just making sure you don't get to tell everywhere people are actually stopping you and really being... And not that I don't like it. I like it now. I can deal with it now. I like it if people do talk to me about my own band, because I'm really, really self-obsessed. So it's great. But then I was really panicking about it. I just didn't know what to do.
Well, I think a slice of self-sabotage can be healthy. Not too much, again. But everything in moderation, including moderation, of course. We'll put a link to pre-order the books. So I see you can order it for £7 according to the website. And when does it drop? When does the book go out?
I think it's October. I'm going to say October. It's definitely autumn. So I don't know what months encapsulate autumn. Is it September to like November, December? I don't know. I should have really stayed in school. But yeah, so I don't know a particular date, but I would say October is when it's actually printed to come out.
Well, I'm really looking forward to reading the book, and I'm really looking forward to the gig on November 28th. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks so much, man.
It's been a pleasure.